Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
And welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm Philip Gilfus, joined by my two strandies for another great Chapter 10 Discovery episode talk. How are you gentlemen doing on this 10th chapter episode day?
10th chapter episode day. How do I even respond to that? I think you mean Chapter 2? After the mid-season hiatus, you got to be up with the times,
nope.
Philip.
I mean, chapters are not that long.
Look, okay, you do a Doctor Who podcast, so you're going to lecture us about how things are split into two and series and chapters. And I mean, they don't even call them seasons over there. They're series. What is with that?
Those crazy people over
those
there.
Those crazy people.
Yeah.
That's right. And before we get too deep in the weeds on despite ourselves, we decided to bring in some expertise after Captain Lorca shows us his accent range, and that is Lee Hutchinson. Lee, welcome to City Alpha 3.
Hello. I feel disappointed that I can't give you what sounds like a more typical Scottish accent than my one, even though I'm from Edinburgh. Lorca's accent's apparently meant to be from Edinburgh. I feel that I'm underselling being Scottish. I feel like I should just be talking like, "Och, aye, the new lassie, and it's great to be with you guys today. Oh, it's an half a treat and all," but unfortunately, I'm a bit more fair-spoken, I think.
Well, if at any point you just want to yell out, "Captain, she cannot take it anymore," we'll be grateful. So,
yeah, well, it is quite early in the morning here, so if someone wants to scream that at me every so often, that'll help.
Yeah, did was that supposed to be a reference that he was, of course, a Scottish engineer? Like, of all the accents he could pick, it's like Scotty? Is that...
Well, I would think you, Darren, as an engineer yourself, would appreciate that the Scots have contributed so much to the world of technology, from the television to medicines and everything in between. I thought you would really appreciate our contribution to the world.
It's like being like with Chekhov here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm thinking more of the Russians. They invented pretty much everything in Leningrad, if I recall correctly.
Absolutely.
A little lady in Glasgow created the Mirror Universe, we all know.
Exactly.
Well, obviously, despite yourself, is, you know, sort of, as we said, the mid-season premiere. I don't even know what language we use anymore.
That's good.
But anyway, a lot of stuff happened. So, you know, let's just get into the big things. And I mean, there's so many big things, but I'm going to start with, you know, in no particular order, a big thing. And that is... I've called it the moment, and that is Dr. Sexybeard.
So you're starting with the big thing.
Yes.
So, there are many big things, but
I mean,
this is definitely
there's
the
Captain
big thing.
Tilly, there's Jonathan Frakes directing, there's so many big things in this episode.
Well, I assume you mean Captain Killy. So, but...
That's not even,
Lee, you're the guest.
Even original there, Phil.
Yeah, I know. So Lee, you're our guest. What do you think of what Ash did to Dr. Culver?
It's hard because I don't really have a proper opinion yet. It's only been like 8-9 hours since I watched the episode after work. Mm-hmm. And my reaction when I watched it was like shock. Like I went, oh! And then I had that sort of that uncomfortable laugh. You went, uh-huh. You know, you're just trying to process something like that. It reminded me of a scene in Sicario where it kind of provoked the same reaction. And if you've seen the movie, you probably know the moment. And I think it's difficult to articulate because I can understand why people's reaction straight away is, you know, anger, whether it's anger that a loved character at this stage has been killed off so casually for potentially shock value.
Gosh, you are. Sorry.
Whether it's an LGBT character that's just been wiped out, whether it's a Latino character that's just been wiped out, there's a lot of not baggage, but there's a lot of, you know, yeah, there's a lot of things attached to this character, and, you know, he's not just a red shirt. But at the same time, I don't know how this story is going to play out just yet, whether things will continue to evolve with this moment in the next episode or two. I don't really know. And I feel something will happen, and then I can properly base my opinion. If it gets to like 3 episodes time and we just deal with the consequences of his death and how it affects Stamets, then yeah, okay, that's disappointing. I had expected more of this relationship. But if it becomes something more and more interesting that kind of reveals itself as it goes on, then I'm all for it. So it's hard to really gauge an opinion outside of, oh, that's quite shocking, I wonder what's going to happen next. It's different now that Trek isn't as episodic as we're used to for the most part. So my opinion is, yeah, I don't know, and I don't maybe necessarily have one, but I'll wait and see.
You know, it was interesting in the, you know, the sort of the break we've had. Either Anthony Rapp or Wilson Cruz, who I both follow on Twitter, may have been both of them, were tweeting covers. I think it was a British LGBT magazine, and I think like two other LGBT magazines that was like, you know, where no man has gone before. It's, you know, these two gay man couple on Star Trek, all these cover shots, and what happens in the first episode? Boom! We presumably, and we don't know, but presumably kill him off. And it's like, well, that's a little, you know, a little too soon. You're reading that cover story and like, oh, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. That shocked me too. Just like, oh, they're on the cover and they're dead. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Surprise. Daniel, what do you think of Sexy Beard? A, do you think he's really dead? Do you think this is a cheap shot? You know, is this Game of Thrones-ing it? Or what's going on? This is
a super cheap shot. I don't get the sense that it's final in any way. I do feel like he'll be back in some form or fashion. But even if that's the case, you know, put aside all the other stuff, which I understand may be difficult for a lot of people to do. You know, put aside that, you know, we have this minority gay character here, and then they kill him off this quickly and this almost dismissively, which I understand that is terribly frustrating. Even if you're in the camp where, okay, let's see how this thing plays out, then, and you expect him to come back in some fashion, then you still have to deal with the fact that they just still did this just to shock you, and then that's it, and it's still cheap, and it's still, I don't know, when I first saw it, it bothered me. Upon a rewatch, it really bothered me. Like, this just feels like, I don't know, I can't think of any way that this can play out where I would be like, oh, okay, that was worth it. If he comes back, then it was for the one episode sort of, okay, yeah, we killed him off. If he doesn't come back, then I think they're going to have bigger issues with people being really upset with it. And I don't know, I do get the sense that he will be back. Ah, man, I can't, maybe it's just because we're in this, and a lot of people are trying to like caution us, don't get too upset, don't get too bothered by it, wait until you see the big picture. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe you're right, but to me it's more frustrating than anything, because it seemed to serve zero purpose in this episode. So why do it? I don't know. These are also the same people that tell us that they're also going to fix all the continuity issues that abound in this show.
Season
still
two.
Have, still Season have two. Seen no sign of that.
Chapter 8.5? Yeah. Well, how does that work out?
So now, how are you counting? Is that 8 meaning the 4th mid-season break? Or I don't even know what the numbers mean.
Yeah, and I don't know. Are we supposed to wait until, is it like the season finale that everything is supposed to make perfect sense? Is it next season?
I'm just saying, if they're losting us, it's not going to work. You know, this trust us, guys, we totally have a plan. I'm like, okay.
They should have had a white polar bear then in the Spore Drive instead then.
Exactly. Spore Drive is cranking out all this black smoke everywhere for no reason. Don't know why.
So and with the Mirror Universe, like, we've got to go back. We've got to go back. You know, and so, you know,
it's just to me, flash it's more, forwards. I have frustration. This episode was frustration to the max for me. I was exasperated upon watching it, and I want to see what happens, but I don't know. I don't see why are they just seems to be like not every episode, but a lot of the course of this season is painting yourself into a tinier and tinier corner with seemingly no way to get out. And maybe they do have this master plan, but I've seen no evidence of it, and I'm not sure exactly where this is going. So,
all right. Are you talking about Star Trek or The Last Jedi here?
Yeah. Now that would be interesting. Yeah.
Now, Darren, I'm going to ask you for speculation, but first, let's give Dr. Culver his moment. Let's presume for the moment that he's dead for the moment. So that's sad because, like, he was the only, well, this is my opinion.
It's not the CMO, so how bad could it really be?
But anyway, it's like, to me, he was the most likable character. People like Tilly and all that stuff, but anyway, and Michael as well. But, like, from the get-go, he's always been the likable character, you know, when even, and so, like, I'm like, he's the only one I liked. I mean, I'm not saying that for real, but, like, you're getting rid of him, and then I didn't rewatch it, but wasn't, like, Stamets in the room?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he's kind of like,
I mean, I know he's checked, spaced out.
His vision went clear right before the incident happens. Like, he mm-hmm. his foggy eyes go clear, and he says one of his cryptic, "The enemy is Palace. Here," or "Get out of the room," or what, you know. They're calling from inside the sick bay or whatever he says. and then his eyes go cloudy again, and then right after that, that's when it happens.
I mean, I just feel like Stamets may kill Ash. I'm just throwing that out there. But anyway, that's just so sad. Because I know, you know, look, Culver's not a primary character. You know, he's secondary, maybe even tertiary, depending on how. But, like, anyway, I was sad. So, Darren, you know, we got, like, 3 seconds of Stamets holding up his lover's body in the, you know, your next episode. But does that mean he's dead or he's not quite dead?
Where's Miracle Max when you need him?
That
would be actually pretty interesting.
Well, this actually... Okay, so I actually have not watched a episode of After Trek until this episode. This was enough to prompt me to be like, okay, I got to get as much information as I can. I mean, I purposely didn't watch After Trek because, you know, I wanted us to have our own conclusions and our own thoughts but not this week. This week I'm like, I need as much information as possible about what is going on. And they had the actor who plays we're all really bad.
Wilson Cruz.
I never remember his name.
They had him on, and they had him and the actress who plays Laurel, and then two of the executive producers. And they basically made it very clear that he's not. So the gist is he's not permanently dead, and there was a book written about mycelial whatevers by the guy who plays Stamets, and supposedly that hints at things. It all that to say, my speculation is he's probably going to be brought back in some way through the mycelial network. Something is going to happen.
Maybe a parallel version of him?
Maybe like a parallel. Like, maybe not from the mirror universe, like the evil universe, but they did say that they didn't want to show his counterpart in the mirror universe, that they wanted him to stay as this pure character. Not like, oh, there's this great character who we, you know, is really kind, and then he dies, and then we see his counterpart. Like, that wouldn't work. So, it made me think of something, Daniel, when you were talking about, like, the fact that, you know, the producers are all like, but just wait. I kind of have to say, I think of a lot of like, Stranger Things, which is another, you know, very fast-paced drama show, but that was all released in one go. And so, I mean, you have characters dying, you have all sorts of things. You know, I won't give spoilers away, but basically, I get what they're saying of, you know, just wait and see. But you also have to take that into consideration when you're writing episodic television, that, like, you know, you may have to deal with a mad fan base for however many weeks it takes your solving episode to drop. Whereas I don't know if there would be as much backlash if this was like, all dropped, you know, the whole second half was dropped, you know, at once, and people could just binge watch through till whatever resolution happens. So again, it's hard. I don't want to put myself in a position of defending, like, oh, well, you know, because they do say, like, well, he's the medical officer and he is the smartest person on the ship. And so it makes sense that he would be the one who figures out, you know, something's up with Ash. But you're writers. You can really write whatever you want. I mean, you can, you know, you can go into the realm of implausibility, but this wasn't necessarily a direction they had to take it, you know, unless, like you said, they wrote themselves in a corner that, you know, because it's like, you know, there's going to be some confrontation because we don't think that Ash is not going to go on this mission. So you have, I mean, you have the scene. And I think what was so, at least for me, what was so shocking about it was the way he was killed, because if he had been phasered, it's like, oh, well, you know, you could maybe resuscitate, but his neck was broken. That's kind
of, you know, you get the noise and you're like, yeah. What the sh-?
Yeah, it's,
there's no cutaway either. No, it's like, it's full so in quick. Front of your face. Like, there's no escape from, oh, that's happened.
Yeah, it's quick and immediate. And you're like, your brain basically says, no, he's dead. And, and you try to rationalize it for 3 seconds, but it's like, I don't know if they have that medical technology in the 20th or whatever century, you know, to fix a, they can fix a broken heart, but they can't fix a broken
well,
neck.
Well, you know,
I mean, again, this, and I know people don't care, but I'm going to make this note anyway. This is also the can't show this to kids, you know, moment now of Discovery. So,
yeah,
you know, put
true.
This check mark,
there are a couple of those
you know, the
already.
Time. Yeah, I mean, you know, in the age appropriate, I'm sure. But, you know, beyond a certain age, like, you know, I know there's violence out there that we show on TV, but I'm like, oh, come on. And this isn't the worst they've shown on Discovery.
Right. You
still
have still. More of the flashbacks of the torture surgery, which still is like, okay, we get it, but
yeah.
What were your thoughts, Daniel, of like as far as how they wrote it and how did were they did they put themselves in that box or how is that coming?
Well,
out?
Yes, this is part of the reason I don't have faith in these writers because
I feel like we need to go to like the death board. You know, where are we in Discovery?
But while you were talking, Darren, I was thinking, you know, like about how the writers wrote this and how the audience has perceived it because of the format of the show. And think of like Best of Both Worlds, right?
Okay.
Now that was purposefully teased, right? As a break situation, as a season break. But the next episode, Best of Both Worlds Part 2, if for example, if Patrick Stewart had left the show, they would have had to kill him off, like, and then that would have been it. Like either way, we were dealing with the situation as it was written. There's no going back on it. Whereas this feels like if this is really where they think the best writing is, then they should stick to their guns. But it seems like they're immediately backpedaling and being like, no, wait. There's then again, it just feels cheap. Then at that point, if there's something coming up in the next episode or in the next 2 or 3 episodes where he just comes back, then it just does feel way cheaper than it should, and it's just there for shock value.
Because it got its shock value. I mean, it's the most talked about thing of the episode. It shocked everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody saw it coming.
That's one thing I think with like the writers that you've got this, like, yeah, they've done this action, and yeah, it's going to play out in some way. Like I think with this, they do clearly have a plan. They think, like, if they are going to bring him back or do whatever, like, that's been thought about is going to happen at such a point. I think, like, that's definitely drilled into their heads. But I just wish they didn't have to, and I can understand why they've had to, where they've had to come out with statements or after the episode's dropped, then here they are on After Trek indulging an annoying Matt Myra, where it's like, well, just wait and see what happens, wink, wink. And it kind of then, do the shocking moment, do it, and then it'll pay off in whatever way you potentially have planned, if at all. Go with that, then sort of go, well, this has happened, I know you're shocked, but don't be shocked too much, or don't be annoyed too much. I'd rather they just went, well, just wait and see, you know, who knows what'll happen next. Mm-hmm. I'd rather something like that than just like, guys, just chill out. I think it can be the problem with some of these things, you know, right? Immediate reaction, right? Everything, you know, everything's a blog, everything's a podcast, everything's these nowadays. Just like, I wish the writers could just say, just wait and see. Yeah, but
not that there's anything wrong with podcasts.
of course, yeah. But it's just, you know.
I know what you mean.
Just let it be, yeah.
Well, the interactivity with the creators can sometimes be a bad thing. It's like, let them be a little hidden in the back room and we'll talk to them after the season, you know?
Yeah, if this is such a cool idea, if this concept really works as a story, then they'll be vindicated in the end.
Yeah.
Like, we, of course, we have these frustrations now.
Right.
And it's like, man, and we maybe we can't see the big picture from where we are at. But if, and maybe this is 2 weeks of angry fanboyism for no reason. And
well, I think girlism as well.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You know what I mean. Fanism, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think fanboy is a purposeful term. And so, but yeah, you know. So.
Yeah. But if it was the case that this is some super awesome storyline that they're telling and that they're bringing it back in some meaningful way and everything, is, then you don't need to be so insecure about it. You know, just let it go. Just hey, sorry, that's what we wrote. And then 2 episodes later, people won't be mad at him anymore because this is, oh yeah, no, he was a robot the whole time or whatever. You know, his Katra fell through space time and whatever. Like, how I don't know how you write yourself out of this situation, but I'm not a writer, so good luck to them.
Yeah,
like how
I
silly
see
everything
you're saying.
You said was, and yet everything you said has been a Star Trek plot.
Yeah, it's. I mean, this could be the summer where we look back and go, I mean, yeah, when the whole season is done, we look back and go, yeah, well, remember those 3 weeks that we were, like, pissed because of that, but, oh, I mean, this is giving a lot of benefit of the doubt at this point in time, but I could see that being the case, maybe.
Now, speaking of things being the case that we all saw coming and we're like, you know what, it's so obvious. It's not going to happen. Guys, Ash is Vok. It's official.
Oh, it's
100%
official.
Official now.
It's so official.
You know, this is...
Manchurian Vok.
I wish... Man, I... Again, this is why I kind of don't have a super ton of faith in the writers. They always seem to leave a tiny bit of doubt, which, when done right, can be clever.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't say the name.
Like with Worka,
so
they do
like,
a lot of doubt in a good way. But yeah.
So something goes wrong, right? Something goes wrong with the programming word, and he doesn't say his name, and then Lady Klingon, which I can't remember her name.
Lorel
gets all upset and concerned. She says he'll be back. Okay, that's fine. So, they're just leaving this tiny... It's like, if you're going to commit to it, just commit to it. And then there's that whole scene where Dr.
Colbert.
Sexy beer.
Colbert? Is it Colbert or Culver?
Ver. I think, is it a V? I think it's a V.
Dr. Colbert report, I think.
Okay. where he is like, we checked for your blank and your blank and your blank and you were all good to go. We gave
your
you
Manchurian
all...
test.
They literally say that. There's that whole scene
yeah.
where like, we gave you the Manchurian test and that's like 99% effective. And then later on, he's like, well, maybe not. I hate that they keep like, just commit to it, man. If he's, okay, if this is going to be your reveal, why keep planting these seeds of doubt?
They can't have it be their reveal because they need him to go on the mission with, you know, Burnham. Like, they put themselves in that corner again.
Like, I don't know, man. It's frustrating me. Every time I watch it, I'm just like, just stick with it. Fine. If he's Vok, he's Vok. And then, like, they have that scene where she says the code word to him, and then he says the code, the prayer that they say back and forth. And... I mean, clearly it's him who voiced Vok before. It is quite clear that it is Vok, but it just seems to be they're always leaving the door open a little bit, maybe, so it's not actually him, and that's what bothers me.
Now, Lee, I know you try to avoid spoilers, but this fan theory has been out there forever, so were you kind of disappointed or like, well, I guess it was obvious?
I think it was more like it's been coming for a long, long time, and I think... The one thing that definitely made my skin crawl and creep was when like he was like, they literally broke your bones. Like they grinded it down. And it's just like, because that's always been the thing I've been thinking, like, well, that element down in my head, because it's like, well, he's like, you know, a relatively well-built human. He's not this like tanked up Klingon. how did that all work? You know, it's like, yeah, you can say they maybe did something with the ridges, but the body just doesn't physically work. It was just the idea of his bones being crumpled down and shaved and, oh, it was just like, it made my skin crawl. It was a horrific, you know, image to have in the head. Like, oh, no, that's not very nice.
Now, and I don't want to get too deep into this, but I guess let's go deep into it if we want to. So, Ash, and I'm going to say Ash/Vok, but for now, you can see if you can correct me. But,
Ash,
so Ash... yeah, has these flashbacks, which we're now not surprised that is his body modification. However, based on prior episode, I guess maybe it was the last one, but anyway, it's been so long. There's also some sexy time stuff. So is that like part of it with him and Laurel, or is that like the implanted trauma memory of Ash? You know, like what, how do those two things combined of like body torture and then like sexual assault or I don't know, you know, what is that? You know, was, because then we have to figure out this whole prism of like, was it assault or was it consensual? You know, what it was part of their relationship? What was going on?
Well, I'm not a writer.
I think the silence says it all, but, doesn't it? Like, we don't quite know yet, and I suppose it's odd to be having a Star Trek discussions where it is so open-ended. And I mean, that's sort of like this episode in a kind of nutshell, is like it's teasing things, it's setting things up for a next episode or perhaps a further episode. So like when we talk about this episode, we almost have half answers, half opinions. It's like, right, they're off to this ship and then something's going to happen. It's like, it seems just like this is a game of putting all their chess pieces into new places, getting ready for the next episode. It's sort of like the big gasp before the, you know, the breather or whatever. It's yeah, I'm interested to see what's going to happen next, but it makes it so hard to discuss and have even a kind of conclusive opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. And this is me again. One thing that sometimes disappoints me about Discovery is that there's sort of all this great storytelling, but I'm not necessarily getting a lot of meaning out of the stories. Like, you know, what is this supposed to be, the deeper thing, unless it's just supposed to be drama and entertaining, you know, quote unquote entertaining or intriguing. But like, okay, so you have Ash with this PTSD. That's interesting, you know, because that can be applied to modern day stuff. But then if it's just a cheat, if it's just like, oh no, just kidding, he wasn't really assaulted, it's just body modification and him having a relationship with Laurel. And it's like, well, okay, well then what was the whole, you know, PTSD storyline about? Nothing, I guess. So I guess trying to figure out that role of in relationship between him and Laurel, and, you know, because Michael's basically bonding with him as they sort of, you know, help each other through their different struggles. But now if that's just a made up struggle on Ash / Vok, then it's like, well, okay,
you know,
never mind.
It's a little bit of an aside, but I did find it interesting when they went through the list of how they modified Vok's body to be more human. Right. So I guess the computer assumed was trauma related to his torture, which was contusions on all of his major organs. I guess that was them removing all of the secondary organs that Klingons have. They said that they cut his tibia, right? I think, and his spine. They removed pieces of it. I don't know. I guess the implication here is that they obviously physically, they surgically altered Vok to be human. And it feels... I know this is kind of a minor nitpick, but it feels like they should have picked up on that, like especially with super detailed scans when he got on the ship. Like,
Dr. Culver is like, again, why is he not the CMO? Because he's obviously the smartest person on the ship. He's like, because I love the, like, and I mean, I'm not making fun of it, but sort of like the slow delivery, like, look, we got an hour to fill. I'm like, okay, we looked it over, but when I looked at it, what I found was that it appeared to me, I'm like, okay, can we, you know, we're not speaking Klingon here, let's speed it up. But yeah, it was like, he went through all these tests, and it basically took Dr. Culver to be like, let me look at it again, nah, you're Klingon. You know, I mean, that's not what he said, but.
Also, real quick, in the beginning of the episode, when they're at Yellow Alert, because they're in the Mirror Universe, and, man, I love this, I love when Lorca is just cantankerous and mean.
Thanks for showing up, Ash.
I'm glad it was only a yellow alert. I thought that was awesome. When he shows up on the bridge, when he shows up there, Saru's ganglia. Plot ganglia activated, which they never have before. As far as I remember, when Ash was around, but they did this episode. So I don't know. I don't know. That was weird.
Well, he had just been talking with Laurel, so maybe he was getting activated. That's my only defense. I agree. It's silly. Yeah. But anyway, so if no further talk about Captain Obvious, I mean Lieutenant Ash. So the Mirror Universe, guys, it's official. We're in the Mirror Universe, which Jonathan Frakes already told us that we were going to be in. So it's not really a surprise.
Yay.
Okay,
I mean,
well,
I have an unpopular opinion about that. I understand that.
Well, yes, that's true. I thought the Mirror Universe was fun. I had heard that they actually were originally going to have them go into the Mirror Universe at like episode 4, but then they realized, but we kind of need to know our characters before we meet their mirror parts, which so they wisely pushed it back to episode 10. And we're still there.
How unlikable the characters were at first. I don't know whether like going to the alternative reality would be like, hi, I'm a cantankerous, I'm annoyed, I'm a rebel as well.
Right.
Oh yeah, and it's probably the reality is like, you think these Mirror Universe people, they seem pretty nice actually.
Yeah, I mean, compared to their security chief, man, they're really good.
Turns out Mirror Lorca is a philanthropist. Real nice guy. Real smart.
I mean, just like totally up front, you can just harden the sleeve, you know.
But he's got a Scottish accent. But yeah, no, it was, I liked it. It was a lot of fun. I mean, we're still there. We're definitely going to be there next week, if not the week after. So
it does not look like it will be fun next week, however.
Well, but that's... fun is a relative term. But I mean, I think they put their own spin on the Mirror Universe. They obviously, just like the uniforms, just like everything, it's not a carbon copy of what we expect, but we can tell where it's supposed to be. I mean, there's a lot of rumors as far as who the Emperor is. There's
Giorgio. That's my money right now.
Yeah, it's my money too.
It has to be Giorgio, right? I mean, who else could it possibly be?
And
who
I
else would
maybe...
be in conflict with Michael? That's the only one.
You know what would be awesome, though? What would be way better than if it was Giorgio? If it could potentially still be Hoshi.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
she
I was trying not
old.
To be, like, racist about it, but, like, Giorgio could be her.
Yeah, I've heard that Giorgio could be her descendant. Like, it's a
that
hierarchy.
Would be,
not
that
saying
would...
all Asians are the same, but I'm just saying that would be a nice connection.
It would be. So I was actually really surprised how deep into canon this episode goes,
yeah.
Right? Because this is the Defiant at this point has gone through already two Star Trek series, and it's I had to rack my brain, like, you know, we do a podcast about Star Trek. I had to rack my brain remembering specifically exactly, okay, so it fell through space time and then landed back in time, and now it's been 100 years, and
because in a Mirror Darkly,
I did not rewatch.
It was... Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say I need help with this because I only watched this once. And so now I'm trying to remember, how did Lorca find... Because in the timeline that we're in now, the Defiant has not fallen through time yet. Because it's the episode of the Tholian Web,
correct.
Which is not for another
correct.
8 years.
Right.
No. This... It,
yes.
Well,
it
hasn't
right.
in the Prime Universe, but it
That's
has in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah,
yes.
and that which was 100 years ago. So how did Lorca know about it? I'm sorry, because I only saw the episode once. How did he know about the Defiant?
Well, no, I think he specifically said something like, well, sometime in the future, it must fall through time. Like, I'm pretty sure he said something along that lines. Because
no, like, how did he know it had gone through time?
Oh, because they found it was on the
a Constitution class
in the Vulcan database.
Yeah, it was in the Vulcan database.
Okay,
and
that's what I was
going to
say. I was like,
while.
I don't even know how he got the information. Yeah, so
and they said, and he was using that as an excuse to find a way out. He said, if the Defiant has got somehow come to this universe,
without
we can use
drive.
The Defiant to get out of this universe.
Yeah,
because they actually, it's actually really interesting. In that conference room scene, they say, oh, isn't the Defiant in like Sector 7 or
right.
whatever, you know, patrolling whatever? And he's like, yeah, currently that's where the Defiant is. It's so weird that it's here. So that's what was interesting about it. So,
yeah. No, yeah. I like that because obviously the Defiant is a cornerstone of Inner Mirror Darkly, the two-part episode for Enterprise. And it'll be interesting. I mean, also the speculation is that that is the Emperor's flagship, which makes sense. But yeah, it's You know, I liked the uniforms. I liked the gold armor on the captains, kind of sets them apart.
But apparently very uncomfortable. Michael's like, oh my God, I got to take this thing off.
True. It was also
isn't
cool.
Isn't everything that after a jumpsuit uncomfortable?
Yeah, that's true. But I was surprised, they were smart and they did audio only, but at the beginning I was like, why are you keeping Saru on the bridge? Get him off the bridge. If anything is going to blow your cover more, it's the giant Kelpian standing next to the captain. But
would they, is that the only, God, is that the only alien on the bridge?
Well, they have the,
no, there's Robo Lady.
Yeah.
Robo Lady. I don't know. They probably wouldn't like Robo Lady very much.
No, she's an augmented alien is what they've said. So she's,
oh,
not,
I thought she was an augmented human. Okay.
No, I've heard she's an augmented alien.
But it's surprising.
I'm genuinely surprised that writers haven't turned out and going, well, you may think she's an augmented alien, but if you just hold on just a couple more episodes.
Trust us, guys.
You think the Emperor's Giorgio. All I'm just saying is just wait an episode or two. Wink, wink. Okay.
Well, let's talk about the one thing that was hinted, I mean, several episodes ago, where Stamets is coming out of one of his jumps and he calls Tilly captain for a second. And then before his mind kind of like shuffles back.
I thought this was going to be a much longer payoff. I remember talking about this and saying, I want to see Tilly take the con, you know, be in charge of the ship in season 3 or 4 and like struggle with it, but then ultimately overcome it. I got to say, by far the best part of this episode for me. Like,
to me the worst. I mean, I get that it's funny, which is weird because like it's deadly. And I mean, I guess you can do dark comedy, but I'm like, it's starting to be too fanficky for me a little bit.
No way. No,
she's
like,
was great.
Yeah, but isn't she like 20?
So she's a cadet, yeah, for sure.
She's captain at 20?
Well, but no, but see, remember though, if the mirror universe is the antithesis, so
the imagine, younger you are, the more powerful you
no,
are?
No. It made sense in my mind because, she is young and she is like really socially awkward and really unself-sure. So now shift that to its counterpart and you have someone who is still young, but they're super confident. They're in a society where confidence and taking action like gets you places. And,
saying there's no 20-year-old in the Prime universe.
Well, I mean, Kirk is, well, or look at JJ timeline, which is often accused
of this
true. Sort of.
I see what you're saying.
I get what you're saying too, but I agree too that
she had to kill a lot of people. Is what I'm saying.
Well, they called
and
her
hence the nickname.
She had all those nicknames, which was great. And exactly what Darren is saying. You know, think of the opposite of Tilly. Tilly's sweet and kind and
Barkley.
Yeah. If she's the nicest one on the Discovery, she's going to be the meanest one. In the mirror universe,
I will make you lick from my boots.
Hey, I actually, line was.
I will
fantastic.
Cut off your tongue and use it to lick my boots. Wow,
that was a great line. Mirror Tilly, that almost worth going to the mirror universe for me.
More
for
like
mirror Tilly,
silly.
And she, well, she. I feel that the character. I mean, I know the actress is really good, but the character played it. I think an even line. Like, yeah, she has to be having difficulty in this new situation, but she also can't make a ton of mistakes without getting caught. So they have to play that line where, yeah, she's coming up with things and you see her get into the role, but she's not like Burnham. Like Burnham steps into that role like she was born there.
Very, very easily. And I think too, not that I'm sure they're going this way, but I think Tilly could grow a great deal from this experience.
Yes.
Because
give her a lot
she
of
does need, she needs to come out of her shell, and maybe this will give her a big boost for her character, and we'll see how it plays out. But
Ensign Killy,
acting,
Ensign. Yeah, I think that
you say that, and I will cut out your tongue and use it to lick my boots.
I hope this is the beginning of big. Big things for Tilly.
What about you, Lee? What do you think of Captain Silly?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought maybe it went on just a little bit too long, but yeah, I liked it. I think the moment I really particularly liked was kind of when, like, the one-to-one chat with Burnham, where she's talking about, like, in this universe that you need to act this way. It's how you kind of survive, and it's that bravado. It's like nobody believes what they say. Everyone just says it to survive. And the idea that she would be sort of the... Yeah, the sort of the idea that she would be captain made sense to me, because if we've seen anything in the Mirror Universe, it's that the closest way to get to a captain is to be an attractive woman, or you know. And so the idea that she was close enough to the captain to take him out and to take the throne, yeah, seemed perfectly believable to me. So yeah, and yeah, I like the Tilly stuff. I'm really enjoying her arc, and I think she stands out, you know, big time. And I think she's probably one of the most relatable characters in the show so far. So the idea that she achieves a bit of success in a way is really heartening.
Now, I don't know. I was thinking of you, Daniel, during this part of the episode where it's like, guys, you're not going to believe this. All our mirror counterparts totally know each other. And they totally have plots that are involved. So Michael Burnham and Gabriel Lorca, funny story, funny story. Turns out you killed the other one. So, and we're all here.
This is this is why I don't like the Mirror Universe. You now have an alternate universe, a parallel universe that, God, I guess the focal point, I don't know, is Mirror Mirror, right? I presume would call that the focal point. Every point you get either before or after that should deviate significantly. Yeah. The further you get from that point, the way crazy different things will be. And that's just not how it is. And they kind of wink and nod at the audience with the Destiny talk that Lorca gives Burnham in his ready room.
Yeah, which I liked. I mean, it was an added touch. I did appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. To me, it feels like cheap writing. Like, you know, well, we're destined. And of course, there's the prevalent theory now that Lorca is Mirror Lorca, who has somehow, our Lorca, the Lorca that we've known this whole time, is Mirror Lorca. I don't know if you guys heard this or not, but I kind of subscribe to it. You know, 25%. That he's Mirror Lorca, and he somehow stumbled his way into our universe, and now he's been trying to get back. And
stumble or set the coordinates.
well, I don't know.
This is my Lorca theory. It works kind of if he's Mirror or if he's not. It works both ways. If he is Mirror, I think that he somehow crossed over to our universe with the destruction of the Buran, because a destruction of a giant ship. Like, he says he set self-destruct, but, I mean, so if he's Mirror Lorca, he was brought over with the destruction of the Buran. I don't think he's necessarily trying to get back to this universe, or I guess it starts with three, but I don't necessarily think that he has to be from the Terran Empire universe. I think he could be from another universe, and he is just trying to find a universe where his crew is alive. I don't think he directionally intended to put them in this universe.
He's doing sliders?
Yeah, he's basically doing sliders, because he, you know, we know he overrode the spore jump. So that tells me that he was trying to get to a mirror universe. I don't think he specifically was like, oh, I'm from the Terran Empire universe. I need to get back. Why would you want to go back there? But that's where I think it's going to come in with the Buran, because they mentioned again that he served on the Buran in the Mirror Universe. So that's where it works either way for me. I could say he's either from, you know, the Discovery Universe, the main one, and he's still, and he has no knowledge about, like, he knows enough that Mirror Universes exist, but he doesn't know, like, you know, because he does think on, again, like you said, Daniel, like, there's that thread and that little tiny window the writers leave open where you're like, is he, isn't he? Which is great. I mean, in that regard, it works really well. But I could see it working either way. He's either from the Discovery Universe and he's just trying to get to any Mirror Universe to get his crew back, or he's from the Terran Empire Universe, the one they're in right now. And he's still just trying to get to another universe, not necessarily that one.
Because he is, in if he is from the Terran, or at least the Lorca of this mirror universe that we're in,
yeah,
is quote unquote. I mean, there's no black and white necessarily. He's quote unquote. He's the leader of the rebels, or leader of a rebels ship against the Emperor. So,
you know, so two things stick out to my mind. The first is when they're all having the bridge scene when they first get there. And they're like, the quantum bits are wrong. Right. And then he way too quickly turns around right in front of the view screen and says, then I guess we're in a different universe. Which, I kind of agree with what you're
saying. He snaps into that mode really fast. So again, like, there's that window.
They're all trying to figure it out. And they're like, whoa. Well, wait a minute. Why does everything have a different thing? And like, you would think that a lot of other conclusions would come to your mind first, but he's instantly like, no, we are in an alternate universe, obviously. So yeah, I agree with you that I think that's probably the case, that he may, maybe he isn't Mirror Lorca, but maybe he's, I don't know what other.
I mean, I definitely believe, like I said, the origin of where he is, it kind of works either way in my theory, but I think his ultimate driving thing is to go to a universe where the Baran crew is alive and bring them back or be with them.
I like that theory. I wouldn't be happy if they made him that this is actually a mirror universe captain. I just think it makes it more exciting, more interesting in the Star Trek canon that he's a captain, you know, cut from the cloth of the Federation, but he's perhaps a bit more cynical. That, you know, we've got so many great, inspiring captains that have had their flaws and had their moments. I rather like a captain that errs more on the side of grey, and it kind of lives up to that sort of Lower Decks attitude of it's about these, you know, smaller characters, and they've got this slightly, you know, darker captain above them that kind of is creating a lot of the tension and the drama. And I really like that. I'd rather it was kept that way personally, but I really like the idea of kind of going off to this mirror universe to bring back and save his crew. I think that's quite an exciting arc.
The portion where they're like, okay, we've got to, you know, we can't let them fool us. You know, we got to totally be mirror. I'm like, or, you know, we're changing our uniforms. We're changing our L cars. You know, it's not L cars, but our computer displays. We're repainting the hull. And like, to an extent, I'm like, that makes sense. But, like, who are we play acting for exactly? Like, you know, we're on the bridge going, long live the Empire. I'm like, you know, no one's watching. It's just us here. You don't have to get into the role that much.
I thought someone like yourself, Philip, would appreciate the off Broadway music.
He's a method actor
going on here on the Enterprise.
they're method acting. Okay, I get that. You know,
I like that montage a lot. My problem is, like a lot of my problems with Discovery, is continuity based in the fact that there should be, if Discovery does exist in the Mirror Universe, it should not have a spore drive. Meaning, it probably shouldn't look anything like Discovery does now that Discovery is in the Mirror Universe. Again, you would think that they would not have had that technology. Like think about the last time we saw the Mirror Universe, which was in A Mirror Darkly. There's no way they would have had developed that technology unless it was given to them or whatever. So I mean, the technology as it is now is already problematic. I know I'm nitpicking, but
well, I think if you want to get problematic with the In the Mirror Darkly timeline, is that they have 23rd century technology in the 22nd century, so any ships now in the early 23rd century or mid 23rd century should be more advanced than the prime 23rd century, if that makes sense, if they had backward engineered the Defiant.
Yeah, no, that's true too.
Well, I'm wondering if they're actually going to give us any knowledge on what the ISS Discovery has been doing in our universe.
I know that's sort of a, they just
swapped. Like, they say that it should be in ours, and obviously it'll snap back. Leaked. Yeah, I mean.
Wait, they didn't say that.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah.
When did they say that?
They said there's another Discovery, like, and we're assuming, and basically, they figured that they jumped at the same time, or I don't know if it's a jump, but basically, they're assuming that the Discovery, the ISS Discovery, is in the Federation space now.
Wait. I think we're. Either I missed something, because I remember Lorca specifically said, as long as we don't bump into Discovery,
right,
then our cover won't be blown. So if they thought that Discovery was in there.
I think he says that, but then later he says, like, when they're trying to figure out how they got there and then how they might get back, they postulate that the Discovery is in the Federation space.
I missed that entirely. Yeah. Okay, I'll have to go back and rewatch that. Okay.
Now, if I remember the quote from Spock in Mirror Mirror, that it is much easier for the good guys to fit into the Mirror Universe than for the Mirror Universe to fit into the good guy universe, so...
Based on what we've seen of the Discovery universe at this point in time, I'm sure the ISS Discovery is going to fit in quite well. You can just go around shooting it. Look, there's Klingons there. Shoot those aliens, scum. And it's just like, well, wow, you'll come back and you'll see all this Discovery crew have got medals of honor and have been promoted to admiral.
I mean, sure, they killed 3 Vulcans and a Trillion, but I mean, you know, you can't break some eggs, something. We're at war, guys. We're at war.
Of course, they're going to be very disappointed that the ISS Discovery does not have the secret Klingon cloak plans. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. Any, we got the teasing for next episode, which I don't know. I don't want to try to read too much, but I don't know. It seems like we might be in this Mirror Universe for a little bit. Like, maybe entire rest of the season.
I don't see that long. I'm guessing maybe at least 3 episodes.
I'm going with 3 as well.
I'm going rest of the season.
Oh, God, please no. Please let it be one more episode and we can get out of there.
And that the season finale will be them, you know, going home. You know,
No. Unless they're going to do some weird alternate universe shenanigans, time travel, and fit this within everything else that we understand Star Trek to be, what's the point? Why bother? I'm not sure.
One of the writers is probably just sending you a direct message right now going, Daniel, I know you've got some concerns, but all I'm saying is...
Just trust us. I don't know, because, I mean, you know, what are other than what was introduced in this episode, is there anything unresolved that we still need to... storylines we need to still fix, you know? I know we sort of tied the bow around a lot of things with the mid-season finale.
That's true. Yeah, the main Klingon die.
Yeah.
The second main Klingon.
I mean, he's the only one I've been seeing, Daniel. Okay, like he's obviously who's been shooting people.
What's the goal of Ash/Vok now? Because, I mean, I guess the only mission he could have is to get the Klingon cloaking secret. I mean, like in other words,
but
you
even
know,
that
the war's
is
lost.
Not, yeah,
Admiral,
what is his plan?
Admiral Lady, what was her name?
Cornwall.
Cornwall. She's still alive somewhere, right? We don't know what's going on with her.
Well, she left. I mean, she went on the hospital ship to get fixed.
Yeah, but like that's unresolved. Like, I mean, she wants to. She would.
Oh, the fact that she knows that Lorca is crazy.
Yeah, that Lorca is crazy and stuff. Like, that's still around. That's a thread that hasn't been picked up on.
It again, season finale. So I don't know any. Because, I mean, now we're going to have some sort of cross-ship storylines, right? Because I saw the Shenzhou go to warp. So it's no longer going to be, like, one big happy crew. It's Captain Burnham and her, you know, boyfriend/Vok Klingon. And then it's going to be...
Hey, what about the Agony Booths? That's a good throwback.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I think I see one being built in your back office there at the moment, Darren.
Oh, yeah. Darren, are you building an agony booth in your little office there?
I mean, I know parenting is different these days, but surely.
No, it's...
I think one thing I actually thought one of the highlights of the episode was I thought the score was excellent this week and stuff. I thought it really stood out, the drum beats for the Mirror Universe and everything. I thought that was one of my little favorite moments of the episode. It certainly made it stand out from some of the previous episodes.
Yeah, and it's a bit fan servicey, but I do enjoy seeing the Shenzhou crew, including... Detmer, that's her name, who's now Discovery, but now we see her not wounded.
Right, she's not wounded.
You know,
with two human eyes?
Thinking about what you said about Captain Tilly versus, you know, Cadet Tilly, you actually have another example in, I don't remember his name, but the one who was the captain of the Shenzhou in the Mirror Universe. He was an ensign.
Cooper. Dead. We don't need to be on first team.
Ensign Con officer, yes.
Yeah, but he was like an ensign in the Prime Universe, so he went from ensign to captain you know, between universes. So Tilly went from cadet to captain. So they actually kind of confirmed a precedence there.
So
it's a young universe. I haven't seen anyone over the age of 35.
We've already seen that we're going to see Mirror Sarek with a beard and everything, with goatee. A goatee and everything.
Is that too much or not enough, guys?
No, it's right on the nose.
Well, it's actually right around the nose, but that doesn't matter.
Right,
I'm curious. What characters do you think we'll see their counterparts of, and what would you want to see? Because presumably going to see some counterparts. That's the whole point of doing a mirror universe. Why bother doing it if it's just all new characters?
I want to see a mirror Saru. I mean, because again, remember, he's part of the Rebels, but is he timid or is he like combat action Saru? And he's like,
with karate like he goes through.
He's like
a mohawk comes out.
Yeah, he's like decked out.
His little feelers come up when he goes, they go up when I know I can kick ass.
they come out and he can shoot them like poison darts instead.
Like a porcupine. He's like, pew, pew.
Kick butt as well. I've seen Tomorrow Never Drives so many times. One of my favorite Bond movies of the 90s. I want to see Giorgio, Michelle Yeoh. I want to see her. You know, she's one of the greatest martial artists in film history.
Can we see her piloting a shuttle, like handcuffed to someone else? And she's like, go right, no left. Which one's driving?
Yeah, she's just like handcuffed to the corner of the Defiant.
I want to see Captain Tilly versus the real Captain Killy, and I want Tilly to come out on top in some sort of unconventional way, and it's going to be awesome.
You don't want the whole someone's got a phaser, and which one is her?
No.
She's like, salsa,
yes,
salsa.
No, I want that now.
You know, it's not to shoot her.
And then she kills her in some like dumb, like killing the Wicked Witch of the West, like dumps about, you know, a bucket of acid on her by accident or something. Oh, sorry. Oh, well.
Yeah.
We know they're going to show Giorgio, right? They have to.
Yeah.
There's no way that they do this without showing Giorgio. Because the episode purposefully makes a plot point out of Michael and Lorca's characters. Do we think that we're going to see them? Or do you guys think that they'll just let that go by the wayside?
Oh, like at the end, because, well, that's true, because if, what if, because she's basically still off to search for Lorca, if the Emperor shows up, is Giorgio, and she's got Burnham right next to her, because Burnham took, like, reported back to her or something, and, like, because that's true, they are setting up Burnham for a reveal that she's not who she is. Meaning, like, right now she's in the position of power because they believe her to be the real Michael. But if the other Michael shows up, then you got a big problem.
Now, we sort of get our wish fulfillment of Captain Burnham, right? You know, for seeing her first officer.
In the universe from hell, but, you know.
Yeah. Though, I had a bit of a... And again, I don't know if this is a nitpick or not. I mean, I think it's valid, but like the whole, you have one mission, Michael. Look in the stupid computer database. And she's like, gets back into her quarters.
She does seem to be taking her time.
30
minutes.
Figuring this out. And then it's like, well, I could look in the computer or I could make out with my boyfriend. I'm like, how about you do the mission first and then you can make out with your, I mean, come on.
It feels really cheap. It feels really cheap. She's like, oh, man, everybody wants my autograph all the time. What am I supposed to do? And it's like, you just killed someone on the turbo lift, man. Just tell them to get out of your face and you want 10 minutes alone in the computer room. Like, why is this a hard thing for you at all to do? But
that was such a good fight sequence as well.
That was really original.
Jonathan Frakes fairly can put one together well.
Especially with the moment when they
gravity like
she kicked it out and fell. That was awesome. That was really cool.
I was worried that he was going to like look at her phaser or something, because shouldn't her phaser be very different from like any phasers on board?
Don't try to make sense of the mirror universe, Darren. That way madness lies is all I have to say.
And
that's actually two episodes from now, Daniel. That's the episode. Yeah, title.
Yeah. And well, we didn't mention there was actually a really cool sequence in the beginning with the worker bee and like the like VR hand, and like apparently you play with the asteroids caster ball is how you pilot the ship. Really important.
See, that frustrated me in that how has Lorca not fired Ash by now?
Okay, like, Ash is really running show on up three to duty. Cylinders, okay?
He has to get prodded to do all his everything he does, and we get these, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I get it that we're supposed to be showing his agony, but, like, it's taken a little long here. I mean, you know, I can only get so many Ash's sweating beads scenes where I'm like, okay, I got it.
Well, he does fire Dr. Whitepants, so...
Yeah. Well... Yeah,
maybe that shows Lorca's judgment in these matters.
Yeah,
I suppose for Lorca, if you're useful with a gun, you're more important. You're more useful than someone with perhaps a heart and kind of that can heal.
Yeah, because we're all about healing hearts here on the Discovery. Well, some exciting stuff. So, do one last round, either about this episode or what's to come. Lee, what do you see in the second half of the first season of Star Trek Discovery? Are you looking forward to a lot, or do you think it's like almost a hitting a reset button, or where do you think we're going?
I don't know where we're going, and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I like that for Star Trek. For too long, I could have predicted, you know, Star Trek seasons for the most part with a straight line that this will happen, this will happen. I quite like going into the next week's episode, not knowing where it'll go, what will happen. You know, for better or worse, this episode was shocking. It was provocative. And that's things that's never really been associated with Star Trek. So whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, they do it. It's surprising. And I like that. I'm excited to go into Discovery each week and go... You know, it keeps me on my edge. It makes for interesting discussion and debate. We can speculate and kind of what'll happen next with characters. You know, in Star Trek, too often they didn't have necessarily an arc, or the arc was small. I'm excited to, you know, debate with fans and talk with people about, you know, in our group chats and listen to podcasts like this and go, oh yeah, that's an interesting idea. Or I never thought about, you know, maybe he's off to the mirror universe to get his ship or things like that. And that's an exciting thing. So whether it is going to be successful or whether they paint themselves into a corner or whatever, I'm excited to see where it goes. And I can't even imagine where we're going to go, but I think it will be exciting. And that's enough for me just now.
Okay, and Daniel, any predictions for our next couple episodes here?
More frustration, probably. I don't know. I'm a little...
Well, we're going to the palace, obviously.
I'm a little irritated. It feels like carrot on the stick. It like, you know, lost frustration where you're getting more questions than answers. You never really feel like you're kind of getting to the point where you get where everything is. And while that temporarily may be an intriguing place for Star Trek to go, I don't necessarily need that to be the place that it exists and is all the time. I don't know. I don't need to know whether or not you're going to bring back the character you just killed. I don't need to question every episode whether or not one of the main characters is a secret Klingon or not. I don't know. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's me and I don't get this new version of Star Trek. You know, maybe I shouldn't question why this seems to not fit in the timeline that I've spent so many years and hours loving and getting into. It's frustration for me every time. It's just, oh, there's cool bits and there's cool things and okay, I'll join and I'll hop on and I'll see where this is going. But then ultimately at the end of the episode, I'm like, I'm always asking the same question. Why are we doing this? What is there a purpose? And I don't know. And I have a little less faith in the writers than some people do. And maybe I try to be optimistic, but maybe that's my pessimism coming through. I am excited. I do want to see what happens in the future. And I hope maybe the writers do have some grand plan. And by the end of the season, the last episode, everything's going to wrap up and work perfectly. And I'm going to be like, oh my God, that was brilliant. I don't think it's going to happen. I am beyond skeptical that that's even a possibility for these people to pull off. But it's Star Trek, so I'm going to keep watching, and you know, I'll find something to love one way or the other.
All right. Speaking of secret Klingons, Darren, what are your final predictions?
I think I was actually just looking over the episode titles for the remainder of the season, and it kind of confirms where I'm leaning as far as I think the next, you know, the next episode is The Wolf Inside. I think we're going to be dealing a lot with Valk and Ash. Episode 12 is Vaulting. I think that's where we're going to probably leave the Mirror Universe. What's past is Prologue, maybe a time travel episode thrown in. And then we have The War Without, The War Within, and Will You Take My Hand, which I think is going to wrap up the season. It seems like they're kind of focusing, I think they're going to focus a lot on, you know, Tyler and Burnham and Lorca. I think it's really going to all be around their storylines being, you know, if Tyler ends up keeping the implanted personality of Ash Tyler, and that is who he becomes, and he's got to deal with that. I mean, that could be a really interesting season too. Then you have, I'm hoping to get some conclusion or development in the story of the Bran with Lorca. I still think that they've mentioned it enough where I think that it's going to come back around in some way in my Lorca theory. And then the question everyone asks about Michael is she going back to jail? Is she finally going to get a badge again? Are we going to see her with another, you know, badge at the very end as she heads off? I mean, it was kind of cool seeing her react to the Shenzhou showing up. Like, that's got to be surreal. It looks just like you remember it, and it's right there.
It was more surreal than surreal. But also, another storyline we've never touched on, and is it just me? Black badges. Third episode, like, hey, there's black badges, never mentioned again.
It's always frustrating. That's the biggest one that's still hanging for me, is like they've got like 300 different science labs with all these crazy things going on it. Like, that's an interesting premise in itself that seems to have been a bit ignored. I want to see more of that.
Sure. That's true. Is what will the rest of the story be for season two? Is it going to be continuing season one, or is it going to go in a completely new direction? I mean,
well, we've already gone in a completely different direction in the middle of season one, so
it's going to be tough without Lorca.
I will say that I'd be very surprised if they stayed in the Mirror Universe the rest of the season. Like, it was literally like half a season.
I'm calling
in,
right
half
now.
A season out.
I would be so infuriated if they did that. I would be so upset. Oh man, God!
If you really think they're going to wrap up the whole thing by the next episode, you've
No,
I think they'll wrap up the Mirror Universe stuff. Yeah.
No, I not, think we're the in thing. There for at least two more episodes.
Okay.
That's fine. I can deal with two. Okay, you're pushing it with three. If we
the
don't
third
get
episode's
out
called
of
Vaulting. They're going to vault out of.
If we don't get out of the Mirror Universe to the last episode, oh, God.
You're not going to be pleasant to podcast with, is what you're saying.
No, I will not be pleasant to podcast with.
Place your Quatloos now. Well, we want to thank Lee for getting up in the wee hours of the morning. So, Lee, if folks want to talk to you about how to do a more accurate Edinburgh accent, where can they find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo, and you can listen to my Scottish dulcet tones on Filibuster on the Nerd Party as well. So, yeah, find me there. And, yeah, hopefully I've had a great time, and it's been real pleasure talking with you guys. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hey, 1 out of 5. How did, or 1 out of 10, let's do that. How did Lorca do?
Very, very well, I must say. You know, compared to, yeah, I think it's one of the best Scottish accents. I recently watched Sub Rosa. So whether that tainted that, I would give him a perfect 10 almost for it. I thought it was very good. It's meant to be an Edinburgh accent, according to the After Trek discussion. So yeah, it's close enough. It's good. It's in the scale of shocking Star Trek accents, it's pretty good.
Isn't Isaacs from the north? I mean, north of England, I mean, but isn't he from the north?
Yeah, he's from kind of around the Leeds area. So, yeah, still kind of, you're more thinking about sort of the Midlands there. So, okay. Well, I suppose this could be a podcast in itself. You know, if you ever want to do a Scottish episode where we talk about all the different Scottish accents, call me up.
Derek Daniel, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter as well, at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word, as in, hey, there's only one universe that matters here, guys.
And Darren, if people want to follow your reconstruction of an agony booth online, where can they find you?
Step-by-step plans.
With multiple camera angles.
They can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi, or my website, drscifi.com.
And if folks want to talk to me about all the loud sighing I did during my watching of this episode, they can find me on Twitter as well at my handle at NCPublicServant. Well, guys,
and
as
another show.
Oh
yeah.
That's right. And
I know
they
it's
can
still
also...
fresh.
Well, if they want to talk about the more timey-wimey things going around, they can listen to me and my wife as we host Time and Space, the Doctor Who podcast here on the Nerd Party. Well, as we said, Daniel, next week you'll be taking us to The Wolf Inside.
For whatever that means, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. We'll have a special guest for you, and yeah, show up, because I'm sure we'll have some interesting conversation just like we had this week.
All right. Until then, I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And I'm Lee Hutchison.
Stranded here on City Alpha 3.